Morning. Today's daf Mecharos is daf Hey. We are on very top of the Amud. We're just going to go back and start from the bottom of the Amud base. And Machlokes in Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish regarding Kedushas Bechor in the Midbar. Again, let's go over the basics, and here's what we all agree upon. In Mitzrayim, so the Bechors obtained Kedusha. The Bechors obtained Kedusha for the very simple reason that they were saved in Mitzrayim. The Bechorim in Mitzrayim were killed, the Makas Bechoros. We got a good, excellent review over the first days of Yontif about Makas Bechoros. And so, and the Bechorei Yisrael were saved, and so therefore they obtain Kedusha. That's a given. And when they go into Eretz Yisrael, they're going to obtain Kedusha as well. That's also a given. It's shot in the Pasuk. Toward the end of Parshas Bo, goes ahead and relates that the Vayaki V'yecha, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, someone help me. That's what's it called? That would be Haftorah Torah for the first day of Pesach. That's very good. But the end of Parshas Bo, should know the Parsha better. Okay. The end of Parshas Bo, Perek Yud Gimel. So the Torah relates that Vayaki Vecha, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, Vayaki Vecha Hashem al Eretz Kanani, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings you into Eretz Yisrael, Kashanish Balachala, Vasechon Asan Alach, Vavar Tachol Petarechem Hashem. So now you're going to have the firstborns are going to be towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Vachol Petar Shagar Behema Asher Yeh, Lecha Zacharim Lashem. And the firstborn animals are going to go to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Chol Petar Chamor Tifte Beseh. And the firstborn donkeys are going to have Kedusha as well. Good. So the Torah seems to state pretty clearly that this is all going to be when we go into Eretz Yisrael. So we have basically two points of Kedushas Bechor. One, when we leave Mitzrayim. Two, when we enter into Eretz Yisrael. And so what does that mean regarding the 40 years in which between Yitzias Mitzrayim and entrance upon Eretz Yisrael? It's a fair question. Not only a fair question, Machlokes Amoraim. Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish debate this very issue. Rav Yochanan says, Kidusha Bechoros B'Midbar, that all the Bechoros that were born in the Midbar are going to obtain Kedusha. And Reish Lakish disagrees. He says, no, lo kishu b'chorz b'midbar. It's not true. All the b'chorz that were born in the midbar do not obtain kedusha. And the Gemara went back and forth between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now, Reish Lakish has a very strong argument, as we pointed out yesterday, and that was psukim in the Torah, meaning the psukim that we just read through. So that seems to be a very good shot on defense of Reish Lakish. On the other hand, for as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, so Rav Yochanan we defended also as well yesterday. However, when all said and done, the Gemara simply had a really difficult time with the position of Reish Lakish based on the following. If you go up a couple of lines in the Gemara, in fact, we'll start from here. Go up a little bit. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. No, velo kitchu, velo kitchu. Four lines from the bottom of the Amud. On Dalam and Beis, Velo Kitchu, you mean to tell me that there's no Kedusha of Mitzrayim Nami? Lo Kaddish, Ha Kamer De Kaddish, Ha Chi Kamer. Mehen Kitchu, Mehen Lo Kitchu. Sorry, that was the end of the previous Sugya. Sorry. Maskef Lo Rapapa, Vemidbar Lo Kitchu, Vaksiv. No. The Gemara says, what do you mean? In the desert, there was no Kedushas Bechor? Pekod, Kol Bechor, Zachal of Nei Yisrael. The Torah says that you're going to be counting every one of the Bechorim. Kol Bechor, Zachal of Nei Yisrael. You're going to be counting all the Bechor of Bnei Yisrael. Now, this is a census that took place in the Midbar and clearly qualifying that the Bechorim that are born have Kedusha. How can you make an argument like Reish Lakish is making that there's simply no Kedushas Bechor for any baby born in the Midbar, when meanwhile the Pasuk in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar seems to indicate that we are counting Bechorim that are born even in the Midbar? Okay. So, Ela Idmar Hachi Idmar. So the Gemara says like this. Here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to basically reset the Machlokes in Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan with just but a small tweak. And this is where we ended up yesterday, and this is where we're picking it up right now. So Rav Yochanan says that they were given Kedusha v'lo pasku. And Rav Yochanan now has not changed one iota. Just like we said yesterday in Rav Yochanan, we're restating, according to Rav Yochanan, that the Kedusha's Bechor just goes all the way through. Starts in Mitzrayim. Every firstborn in Mitzrayim is going to have Kedusha upon Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that extends through the Midbar and upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael. We will have to address the question, how does he learn the Psukim? The Gemara is going to ask that question. But in the meantime, however, Rav Yochanan hasn't changed an iota. However, what about Reish Lakish? Changes just but a little bit. Reish Lakish Amar Kitchu Upasku. That the Mitzrim, sorry, the Bechor that were born in Mitzrayim are going to have Kedusha. Again, everyone agrees to that. And the Kedusha is going to extend into the Midbar, but at the census, look at the top Rashi in the Amud on Hamad Aleph, U'paskum mishas ha-cheshbon sho'chum ha-shapagudnim ve'elech. But once you get to the census, so it's true that every Bechor that's born between Mitzrayim and the first census are going to have Kedusha. And so that means that according to Reish Lakish, the Kedusha's Bechor encroaches just a little bit in the Midbar, but only up to the census. From that point going forward, Pascha, it stops. Now, if you go back to yesterday's daf and you review a lot of the back and forth between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, this does address many of the questions that was posed against Reish Lakish. And so within this new approach, it works out a little bit better according to Reish Lakish. Now, Bishlam and Reish Lakish, the Gemara continues now, finishing up this discussion. And for Reish Lakish, I understand Kedamar time. In other words, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, his core position that fundamentally, again, even with the tweaked position, fundamentally, all the Bechor that are born in the Midbar don't have Kedusha. And again, it's very simple to defend, because he's reading the Psukim of the Torah, V'haya kevi'echa. The Torah says, when I bring in Eretz Yisrael, so then you're going to have Kedusha's Bechor. But Ella, Rav Yochanan, my time, but Rav Yochanan, how do you read the Psukim of the Torah? So the Gemara goes on to explain, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Rav Yochanan, Chazai b'chama demosa ma'ayas amina. So Rabbi Lazar says, look, before I preface my answer, I have an answer. But before I say the answer, so I just want to report to everybody that I saw Rav Yochanan last night in a dream. And so it's a siman tov, it's a good omen. I know we're generally speaking not into omens, and dreams are in fact prophetic, the Gemara at the end of Brachos says. So, okay, anyway, he saw Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan, by the way, was his Rebbe. So the fact that he saw him in a dream is not totally bizarre, but he says that it happens to be that last night I saw him in a dream, so therefore I know what I'm going to say. It's going to be good. Amar Kra, Li Yu, B'av Yasan Yuhu. So first and foremost, as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, so it says regarding the Bechor that they're Li Yu, they're going to be mine in a constant state. We saw the word Yiyu from the word Haya means that they're in a constant state, meaning once the Bechor obtained Kedusha, that's it. That's a status that continues. So it maintains. That's number one. Over Rabbi Yochanan v'ayakev yachav avarta mayavilei. Okay, great. And now, once again, let's re-ask, what about the psukim in the end of Parshas Bo? Ha'umi b'ayle l'chedetayin. So the Gemara says, for that, Rabbi Yochanan has a response to that as well. Debei Rav Yishmael ase mitzvazu shebishvila tikanas la'aretz. In other words, you're basically reversing not the order of the psukim, but the understanding of the psukim. We read the Pesukim originally, and this is obviously how Reish Lakish read the Pesukim as well. You're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and then, this is Reish Lakish's reading, and then, etc., etc. Meaning, and then Kedusha's Bechor. That's Reish Lakish. What the Gemara now is reading on behalf of Rav Yochanan is like this. Because you are going to keep the laws of Kedusha's Bechor, so is the zchus on the merit of that, so then you're going to get into Eretz Yisrael. Right? Shebishvila tikanas la'aretz. So he is reading the same psukim, but the thrust of the Kedushas Bechor is not A then B, but rather because of B then A. Because we're subscribing to Kedushas Bechor, so therefore that is going to allow us to have the merit to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, okay, now, although we have just spent half of Dalet Amud Beis, the second half of Dalet Amud Beis, and now the top of our Amud, Hey Amud Aleph, discussing this machlok between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, where, again, the positions are very clear. Rav Yochanan, up until now, has said that the Kedushas Bechor started Mitzrayim and continued through the Midbar. Reish Lakish says, no, that there was a break of Kedushas Bechor. It started Mitzrayim, stopped in the Midbar, again, version number one, totally stopped, version number two, up to the census, and then restarted in Eretz Yisrael. That's the machlokas as we had up until now. So in Bavel, Rav Mordechai and Rav Ashi says, we have a slightly different version of the machlokas. Where? Rav Yochanan Amar, lo kishu b'chorz b'midbar, Reish Lakish Amar kishu b'chorz b'midbar. It sounds like the exact opposite. Now, in of itself, not the end of the world, meaning it's not great, but in other words, we know the machlokes in Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish is just that in Bavel, their mesorah was that it was flipped. Rav Yochanan felt that there was a break in the Kedushas Bechor, and Reish Lakish felt no break. Okay, but Amar Lei Vapishma Natiyufta Vapishma La Dehar De Rabbi Lazar. So the Gemara says, okay, but it's not just a standalone machlokes Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. There is also all the back and forth between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. There was Rav Elazar's interpretation of Rav Yochanan. So if you're flipping around the sheets, so you're flipping around all the ancillary discussion that surrounded it. So Amar Leilo, Kichu Lohut Tzricha Likadesh. The Gemara says, no. Even in my version of the machlokes, the intent is exactly the same. The machlokes as I have it is the same as it was originally presented. Now, in my version, right, this is Rav Ashi talking. Sorry, this is Rav Mordechai talking. In my version, I have Rav Yochanan saying lo kitshu. But what he means lo kitshu is that there was no need to be mekadesh them because they're already nikdash from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, yihach yehainu didan. So the Gemara says, okay, so thank you very much. In other words, what have you contributed to the whole discussion? Meaning, so you're basically telling me that you agreed to our version of the Machlokes in Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. You have it in a slightly different signon. You have it in a different format. Okay, that's great, but what have you contributed? So, Kamash Man Chayav Adam Lomar B'Lashon Rabo. What I contributed is that I say it the way my Rebbe says it, meaning that you're right. My understanding of the Machlokes is the same as your understanding. But I learned it with my Rebbe. My Rebbe had a certain way of saying it, and Chayav Adam Lomar B'Lashon Rabo. When you say something, you have to say it over like your Rebbe said it. Right? An important rule in terms of Masorah, in terms of keeping the Masorah. And so therefore, correct. No difference between the way you're saying it and the way I'm saying it. I just am saying it the way it was presented to me. Okay. Shalkant Rokas Hasar Es Rav Yochanan Zakkai. Okay, dialogue. Dialogue that takes place between some sort of Roman general and Rav Yochanan Zakkai. Now, as you can well imagine, it's going to be an antagonistic relationship, and the questions are all going to be antagonistic in nature. Okay, and as I mentioned before the daf, before I pressed the play, the record button on today's daf, so we're going to get a lot of this in the first parak of the Masechta. When we get to daf Ches, Mir Tashem, so we're going to see a lot of back and forth, a lot of dialogue. Over here, it's going to be more or less understandable. On daf Ches, I'm at base. Okay, I'm going to... You know what? Let me be optimistic. I will understand everything that comes up on Daf Ches Amud Beis. I know before the Daf I said differently, but why not be optimistic? Not going to understand a word of it. So anyway, but in the meantime, however, over here it is going to be a cantankerous discussion between the two. Rav Yochanan and Zakkai, remember, Gemar and Gittin. So he was the one who basically saved Yiddishkeit after Chorban Bayis Sheni, destruction of the Second Temple. So he basically was the... was the bridge and the link that took us from the Roman destruction of the Second Temple to the Masorah, Tein Lichayavne v'chachameha, etc., etc., etc. See the Gemara in Gittin, Nunvav, Nunzayin, for more on that. In the meantime, however, so here a discussion, a polemic, if you will. So Befratan Shalavim Atamotzei Esrim V'Shleim Elof V'Shalosh Meos Becholan Atamotzei. Okay, and basically we're going to start off with accounting discrepancies. A couple of them. One, as we have reported now since yesterday's daf, so how exactly were the Bechorim redeemed? So there were a total of, in the Midbar at the census, 22,273 Bechorim in total. There were, as been reported now up until now, 22,000 Levim. And so therefore, the Bechor is going to be Nifta onto a Levi. It's 1-for-1 ratio in terms of Bechor to Levi. Okay, and that left over 273 Bechorim who went unredeemed. So for that, the Torah addresses that already. And the Torah says, so they gave money. Each one of them gave 5 Salaim. Okay, good. So that is all has been reported in the Torah. As this Roman general now points out to Rav Yochanan Zakkai, you know, Moshe, I think he skimmed a little bit off the top. I really think he did. Why? Because total number of Levim, the Torah itself reports that there were 22,300. Now, by the actual transfer of Kedusha from the Levim to the Bechor, so the Torah does say the number 22,000. But if you look at the census, so you don't need to be a gross accountant. You just simply need to add numbers together. And if you look at the numbers presented in the census regarding the Levim, it comes out to the number of 22,300. Oh, so here's what Moshe did. This is what the Roman general now is accusing. Moshe basically, he took the numbers of Levim, he trimmed them down to 22,000. So that now means that 273 of the Bechorim now are going to have to pay their way out. Oh, so that's basically money into Moshe's pocket. Meaning if he would have kept the number 22,300 Levim, So then none of the Bechorim would have to pay Moshe money. So the Roman general is now pointing and poking his finger at Rav Yochanan and Zakkai. I get it. So Moshe Rabbeinu is skimming off the top, right? It's got to be. So Amar Lei Oslan Shalosh Meos Bechor Is Hayu Ve'en Bechor Mafkia Bechor. So to which Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, no, yeah, that's not. You're wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu did not skim off the top. There were, meaning your numbers are right, there were 22,300 Levim in total. But of them, 300 were unavailable for Bijon. Why? Very simply. Because you have to understand that of the Levim, many of them themselves were Bechorim. So in other words, every Bechor needed a redemption. Even the Bechor Levi needed a redemption. So if you're a Bechor Levi, so how do you redeem? I know it's a little bit strange, but I'll say it and you'll hear it and just keep saying it to yourself. They end up redeeming themselves. Meaning their lateness, a little schizo, but their Levi portion of themselves, they're going to be redeeming their Bechor portion of themselves. So they have to take care of their own pigeon, the firstborns. How many firstborns were there? 300 in total. So there were 300 Bechor Levim in total. So they had to address their own pigeon, leaving now 22,000 who were available to be poda the other Bechor. And again, now we're back to the Pesukim in the Torah. Now we're good. Now there were a total of 22,273 Bechorim, and 22,000 were redeemed by the 22,000 Levim who were available to redeem. And that now leaves 273 left unredeemed who have to pay money. The numbers work. So my taima. So the Gemara now, everything I said, the Gemara is going to say. My taima, Amar Abaye, Dai LeBechor Sheyafki Kedushas Atzmo, because the Levim Bechor have to be mafkia. They have to release their own kedusha. So their Levi portion of them are going to be able to redeem the Bechor portion of them. Okay. That is that's poke number one. That this Roman general poked Rav Yochanan Zakkai, leveling accusations at Moshe Rabbeinu that he was skimming off the top. Here comes another one. Another accounting discrepancy. Now the numbers over here, we could get very lost in these numbers. And as general, my purpose is not to get lost, but rather to keep everything as simple as possible. The largest monetary denomination was a kikar. Now, how much is a kikar? So a kikar resulted in a lot of shkalim. Okay, 301,000. Sorry. 603,550 Jews after leaving Mitzrayim donated a half shekel. Of which that meant that there were a total of 301. I have all the numbers written in my Gemara. My cheat sheet. 301,775 shkalim were collected. If you do the conversion, so as you move up in larger denominations, it comes out to 12,071 mana. It comes out to 201 kikar and 11 mana. Okay, just right now you can just trust me on the numbers. The numbers are all correct. Okay, so, and for our purposes right now, what's the number you really have to hear? You have to hear the number 201. Okay, 201 kikar and 11 mana, right? A little bit of change. So that was the amount that was collected in total from the Machatzis HaShekel. So we know now in terms of, now I'd say it's an operating budget, but it's also really capital campaign as well, because as we know, a lot of these silver coins went to the actual production of the Mishkan, meaning the silver. Remember, the coins back then were actual metal content, meaning when we say that there was a kikar, that meaning that was a coin, there was a huge coin made up entirely of silver content. Okay, so this was, so we now know the total collection. Good. So we have a line item for the total revenue. Now, how much did Moshe actually spend? So this is now where it gets a little bit tricky, and this is now where the Roman general pokes Rav Yochanan Zakkai. So, Dichsiv Bekal HaGogolos Machatzis HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh Uvenesinos HaKesef HaTamotzei Ma'az Kikar. Now, how much did Moshe actually spend? What was his expenditure? Only 100 kikar. Now, if he collected 201 kikar, again, and 11 mana, and he only spent 100 kikar, so Moshe pocketed for himself tremendous profit. Okay. Now, where was that silver kikar used? So that was used for the sockets of the beams of the Mishkan. So the total number of silver that was used, the Pasuk says, So for those silver sockets that are on the bottom of each one of the beams of the Mishkan, so it used up a total of 100 silver kikar. Okay, which means that Moshe pocketed, and by the way, Moshe pocketed not just 100, but more. 101 kikar and 11 mana. So, basically, Moshe's a thief. Now, Chalila, but this is now what the Roman general is saying. Moshe Rabchem Ganav Haya. I'll give you your options. Either he's a thief, O Kav Yustaf Haya. Now, Kav Yustaf, Rashi elsewhere says that Kav Yustaf is a gambler. Over here, Rashi elsewhere says it's a kidnapper. In our Gemara, and see the top tosis for this discussion. In our Gemara, probably the easier translation would be that he's a gambler, right? With a lot of debt, right? That's what gamblers have. They have debt. So, Eino Baki Becheshbonos, or he just simply doesn't know how to count. So, Natza Mechza V'Natza Mechza. Mechza Shalom Lo Hichzir. So, Moshe collected 201 and 11, 201 kikar and 11 mana, and Moshe only spent 100 kikar of it. Not even half. So, Amar Lo. So, okay, fine. So, that's the accusation. And again, working with the numbers that the Torah provided, meaning, I'll say it for the moment, he's right. Right? Moshe collected 200 kikar, 201 and 11 mana, and only spent 100. So, for a moment, we'll say he's right. So, Amar Lo, so Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is going to defend. Moshe Rabbeinu Gizbar Neman Haya, he was a honest CFO. Ubaki Becheshbonos Haya, not only was he honest, but he's also competent. He knew how to count. Umanashal Kodesh Kafal Haya. Now, the Manashal Kodesh, so the money that Moshe used was actually double the amount, meaning that even though when citing the money, so the money actually was double the size that it is currently used. So the money as a currency in the time of the Midbar was twice the size as it currently constitutes, currently meaning at the time of the writing of the Gemara. So therefore, even though it says 100, 100 really meant 200. Now, even though that is more or less a way of resolving the discrepancy, it's not a full resolution of the discrepancy, and the Gemara is going to point that out. Havi bar Rav Acha, Maika Kashile. Okay, so that's the end of the dialogue. Okay, now, the Gemara has a lot of follow-up questions regarding this dialogue. So, v'himas kikar kesel etzeket, hanuch etzeket v'inach begaza. So the Gemara says, first of all, this is Rav Achai asking the question. So he says, first and foremost, like, I don't even understand the accusation. So of the 201 that was collected by Moshe, 201 kikar collected by Moshe, so it's true that he spent 100 on the actual sockets for the Mishkan. That doesn't mean that Moshe pocketed the other 100. In other words, there was a slush fund. So it could very well be that the other 100 just simply went to whatever, either for a rainy day, for operations, whatever the case is. Meaning, the accusation is predicated on the fact that, of course, Moshe pocketed it, and that in of itself is not self-evident. It could just very well be that he put it away. So, So the Gemara says, well, we do have another pasuk that says that the silver that was collected from the nation was me'as kikar. It was 100 kikar. So it sounds like that the total collections was 100. So that means to say now that we have another pasuk that explains that even on the collecting side, it was 100 kikar. So that doesn't work out because we have another pasuk that says that they collected a half shekel from everybody. A half shekel, we did the math in the beginning, total to 201 kikar. So how do you get from 100 to 201? So again, so you have to use Rav Yochanan Zakkai's answer that really the mana in the Torah, in the Midbar, was twice as big as what we have nowadays. Okay, fine. So that was back and forth number one. Another follow-up question. Now the Gemara says, okay, now Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai gives an answer, which is that the mana of the Midbar was twice the size of our current day mana. Okay. So the Gemara says, look, that's an answer, but how is it an acceptable answer? Meaning, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said it. Now keep in mind, he's debating with this Roman general. Now the Roman general, like, he just simply said, oh, okay, fine. Meaning, it is an answer that mostly resolves the discrepancy, but like, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai could just simply say it, and like the Roman general was happy with it? Does he have any basis to say that the mana used in the Midbar was twice the size of our current mana? So the Gemara now is going to try to cite a number of different sources to prove that the mana that was used back in the Midbar is twice the size of our current mana. Again, I say our current mana. I'm not talking 2019. I'm talking about what they were used to. So, Elam Aminei Shari Kanshivim Ve'echad Mana. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it comes from right there, meaning maybe it's the pasuk itself that describes it. Why? Because Hare Kanshivim Ve'echad Mana, because we're left with 71 mana, meaning if you do the conversion, and again, I did it. If you do the conversion from shkalim to mana, again, total of 301,775 shkalim. Now, if I convert from shkalim to mana, there are 25 shkalim for every mana. So basically take the number and divide it by 25. So you're going to end up with 12,071 mana. So 12,071 mana, so that means that there's 12,000 with the tens and ones of 7 and 1. 71 mana. So the Gemara says, Ve'etayla v'shiva me'az v'chamishim v'shivam asa vavim la'mudim. So the Gemara says that another pasuk in describing the construction of the Mishkan says that 1,775 of the mana were used for the vavim la'mudim, the hooks for the amudim. V'lamana kasam ela b'protrot. The Gemara says now, as far as the Torah was concerned, the Torah was using what unit of measurement? So they were using a small unit of measurement. V'imisa mea ve'echad kikar v'achat asra mana mibayle. Now, why didn't the Gemara over there count it as 101 plus another 11 mana? So ela midala mana na kasav ela b'protrot. The Gemara, by virtue of the fact that the Torah did not use the larger measurements, but rather smaller measurements, shmamina mana shel kodesh kaful haya. So that gives an indication that the mana of Kodesh was actually double the amount. So the Gemara says that in of itself is not sufficient proof. So the Gemara says, look, maybe as far as the Torah's counting is concerned, the Torah just enjoys using larger, rounder numbers. Meaning that even though I understand it's accounting and obviously it's important, and yes, Moshe will look as if he is skimming off the top, if not giving a precise amount, but still, in terms of following numbers, the Torah generally enjoys using larger numbers, meaning numbers in the 100s, not smaller numbers. Ela mehacha, so the Gemara says, okay, another possible proof. Again, we're looking for a source that tells us that the mana of the Midbar is twice the size of our current mana. Unechosha satanufa shivim kikar ve'alpayim ve'arba meo shekel. Sharei kantisha v'shisha mana. So the Torah elsewhere talks about the amount of copper that was collected, and it amounted to 70 kikar and apayim va'arba meos shekel and 2,400 shekel. Sharei kan tishim v'shisha mana. Now, if you do the math, it comes out to 96 mana. V'lo mana nakasov. And meanwhile, the Torah does not count it as 96 mana. So ela b'protro, and the Torah only counts it in smaller denominations. So shma mina mana shel kodesh kaful haya. So that means that because the mana was doubled, and that's why the Torah didn't give the number 96. So the Gemara says v'dima prata rabba kachashe bikikare prata zura lo kachashe bikikare. And so the Gemara says once again, maybe not so. Maybe again the Torah enjoys using the larger numbers, but not the smaller numbers, and that's why once you get to anything less than 100. So then the Torah would rather, instead of using the mana, the Torah brings it down to the smaller denominations. Elam Rav Chista Mehacha, so the Gemara says, okay, it comes from the following. V'ashekel esrim gera esrim shkalim v'chamisha v'esrim shkalim asara v'chamisha shekel hamani yelachem. So we have a pasuk in Yecheskel describing the third base of Mikdash, and as far as we're concerned, we just need to know the number, total number of shkalim that get us to a mana. The number 60. Yes, it's a strange pasuk in Yecheskel, in that in Sefer Yecheskel, it doesn't say 60 shkalim make up a mana. It says take 20, add 25 to that, and add 15 to that. Okay, that in of itself is unusual, but for our purposes right now, I'm just giving you the fast pass to the Gemara. 60 shkalim make up a mana. That's so says the pasuk in Yecheskel. Now the Gemara says v'ham masayin v'arba havyan. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. 60 shkalim make up a mana. So again, going back to our trusty numbers at the beginning of the shir, so it's 25 shkalim make up a mana. So how do we get to the number 60? So, in other words, if I took 60, so 60 ends up to becoming 240 dinarim. So 240 dinarim, so that is a lot more than what we thought the number was going to be. So elish mamina manashal kodesh manakafel haya. So the Gemara says, so it must be that it's double. So that means as follows. We assume that aman is 25 shkalim. That's what we've assumed. And we're correct. But the mana of the kodesh, of the Beis HaMikdash, so the mana of kodesh is going to be double that. Now, if I take 25 and I double it, so that gets me to 50. That's good, but that's not good enough. Meaning the pasuk in Yechezkel describing the shekel of the Beis HaMikdash is 60, not 50. So the Gemara says, so here's what happened. Gemara gives us now, fills in the rest of the story. The mana of the Beis HaMikdash is double the amount of what we're used to. And on top of that, they also added to the weight amount, meaning that they were in the right to add to weight amounts. Right? It's not a great analogy, but nowadays you see governments do this when inflation gets out of control. So they just simply take a new, they issue a new denomination, a new currency. Okay? Again, not the greatest analogy, but the idea is that sometimes, for whatever various reasons, for whatever economic reasons, sometimes they took the currency and they added to the actual currency. They added to the weight content of the currency. Fine, you're allowed to do that, but when you do that, you're capped. How much can you add at one time to a currency? Only 1/6. So that means to say that now they had 50, meaning the standard money was 25 shkalim. The money shel kodesh is going to be double that. That's going to be 50 shkalim. And then what we're going to do is that they added to it, but they were capped at only adding 1/6. Now, when we say 1/6, what how does that mean? So back in the day, how did they work with their fractions? Always milabar. In other words, it was a 6 after it was added on. I told you the easiest math trick that I learned regarding this idea of milabar is take the fractional number, which is 1 over 6. Just simply take the denominator, knock off 1. So it's 1/5. So if I take 1/5 of 50, that's 10. Add it on to 50, that's 60. What's a 6th of a 60th? It's 10. So in other words, so fractionally speaking, you always work milabar. It's always after the fraction's been added on. So shma mina mosifin alamidos vein mosifin yeser al shesus. Shma mina shesus milabar. Good. So this is now an excellent source that tells us that the mana shel kodesh was doubled, as per the pasuk in Yechezkel. This allowed Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when poked and prodded by the Roman general, where the Roman general said, "Hey, your Moshe Rabbeinu collected 201 kikarim, only spent 100. How does that work?" And the way it works is that when he collected 100 of mana shel kodesh was actually double the amount. So Moshe was good for the most part. Moshe, okay, fine. In other words, but that is at least a better way of resolving the discrepancy than going from 100 to 201. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of that. Sugya Amar Rabbi Chanina. Okay, and a question that we asked in the beginning of the Masechta, the Gemara asks exactly this question. Firstborn humans have Kedusha. Okay? We're looking in Parsha's Bo, the end of the Parsha. Firstborn kosher animals have Kedusha. Right? All firstborn domestic kosher animals are going to have Kedusha. Good. And then what about non-kosher animals? No, they're not going to have Kedusha. Except for the donkey. Right, our parak here in Bechorah, except for the donkey that's going to have Kedusha. Good, so the Pasuk in the Torah says it. But to the best of our ability, why? Why should that be? Now, yesterday we had the good pleasure of hearing Rabbi Shabtai discuss some of the whys behind the mitzvahs of the Torah, meaning is it even a fair question to ask why? But the Gemara here does. And by the way, if you listened to the shir yesterday, I caught the end. I got his basic point. So if you look over here in our Gemara, so basically, you know, you're always going to hear throughout the Rishonim, you know, are you allowed to seek Tamei Mitzvah? Are you not allowed to seek Tamei Mitzvah? We're going to see the Machlokas right here in the Gemara. It comes up right in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Chanina Shaltis Rabbi Eliezer Bebeis Mosva Rabba. So I asked Rabbi Eliezer in the Beis Mosva Rabba, in the big yeshiva, right? Beis HaMezer Shagadol. So Manishanu Pitre Chamorim Me Pitre Susim Gemalim. I don't get it. Why is it that the firstborn of a donkey is going to have Kedushas Bechor and no other non-kosher animal? Like, how does that make sense? Amar Leh Gzeres HaKosafi. So answer number one, Pasuk says so. Meaning? Answer number one, the question doesn't even get off the ground. You're asking... I know. So you're asking me why? I'll tell you why. So look in the Torah. Torah says so. So that's answer number one. Now, and admittedly, by the way, we're reasonable people. We're rational people. We like reason. We like rationale. And so, understandably, you know, the answer to us is not satisfying. But truth of the matter is, it should be. Meaning, right? It's even from the first answer of the Gemara, lesson learned. Meaning, the Torah says so. Okay, and simple compliance. Okay, the Ode and the Gemara says, and if you want a reason, I'll also give you a reason as well. Shisiyu Yisrael b'shas Yitziasam Mitzrayim. So they helped and aided us in terms of leaving Mitzrayim. So what we were left Mitzrayim with is a lot of wealth, a lot of gold, and a lot of silver. And in other words, there's only so much we could schlep ourselves. So we needed schleppers. So and instead of getting Sherpas, so they got donkeys, and they got a lot of donkeys. Shein lecha kol echa ve'echam Yisrael shelo hayu imo tishim v'chamorim lubim. Every Jew had 90 donkeys. Now, if you do the math, so, right. Right. So if you do the math, so it comes out to be a lot of donkeys. Okay, sorry for not giving a numeric answer to that. Right, I'm exhausted. I'm spent in terms of giving out numbers today. So okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, another fast pass for today. 54 million, 54 million donkeys. So, okay, the number could be hyperbolic, all right? I think it's reasonable to say that. Point is very simple. Point is that they were helpful. They were super helpful. Now, to an imikaspa v'zava shal mitzrayim, v'oshalt imay lashon refidim. And now the Gemara turns its attention to other general questions and answers. You know, one of the places that we stopped in the desert is a place called Rephidim. Now, we're familiar with Rephidim because that's where we were attacked by Amalek. Why is it called Rephidim? Is that the actual name of the place? Now, the question is curious, by the way, because you can ask this about any name of any place, right? Why is Boca Raton called Boca Raton? Well, we here in Boca know the answer. It's not a it's not a pleasant answer. But anyway, why is Rephidim called Rephidim? Oh, okay. So the Gemara says, V'amali Rephidim Shema. So he says, well, what do you mean? That's the name of the town. So tonight, now the Gemara has a debate on this very issue. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Rephidim Shema. Rabbi Eliezer says, yeah, that's exactly the name of it. The name of the town is actually called Rephidim. Rabbi Yeshua Amar Sheripu Asma Medivrei Torah. No, that's not the name of the town. That is an adjective. It's describing the Jewish people in Rephidim, where they were lax in their study of Torah. V'cheinu Amar lo hifnu avos albanim rifyon yadayim. The word rifyon means laxity, weakness. And so they were weak in learning. And as a result of that, that also explains why it was that we at that point in time were vulnerable. We were susceptible to the attack of Amalek. V'od sha'alti my lashon shitim. Also, by the time of Pinchas and Balak and Bilam, so we were in a town called Shitim. Why is that town called the town of Shitim? V'amrele Shitim Shema. And again, the first answer is that's the name of the town. Kitanai Rabbi Eliezer Amar Shitim Shema. And this also is a machlokas amongst the Tanaim. Rabbi Eliezer consistent. Rabbi Eliezer says, you know why the town is called Shitim? Because that's its name. Rabbi Yoshua Amar Shinis Asku B'divishtos. No. In other words, what happened in the town of Shitim is that they act foolishly. So what they did is that they were with the Midianite women. V'tikren al-am. So, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yoshua Amar Shinesasku B'divishtos, V'tikren al-am L'zivchei Eloheihen, Rabbi Eliezer Amar Arumas Pagubahem. So in terms of cohabiting with the Midianite women, so Rabbi Eliezer says that the women presented themselves scantily clad. And I'm being nice in the way I'm explaining the Gemara. Rabbi Yeshua Amar Shinesasku Kulam Balei Kriyan. And Rabbi Yeshua says that at that point in time, they were all Balkari. They all had a discharge as a result of seeing the women. But this goes back to that they acted in a foolish manner, in a nonsensical manner, and that's what caused them to be with the Midianite women. Okay, let's go a little bit further. Right? Moabite women. Maybe I'm confused.
Because it says Moabite.
Okay, so could be I'm confused. Okay, it's fair. Thankfully, I make mistakes. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. And here in our Mishnah, we're going to be talking about mutations. Various mutations that occur within animals, and so mutations, it's an old phenomena. It's part of the fabric. It's a part of the fabric of nature. And so, So the parsha yalda min chamor. So let's say you had a cow, and what came out is something that looked like a donkey. Okay, so we know that its mother was a kosher animal, and meanwhile, the offspring looks like a donkey. Or you have a donkey that gave birth to something that looked like a horse, Peturim and Bechora. So in these circumstances, so it's going to be exempt from Kedushas Bechor. So in terms of whether it's kosher or not kosher, stay tuned. But in terms of Kedushas Bechor, no Kedushas Bechor. Why? Shenemar Petr Chamor. Petr Chamor Shnei Pamin. Because the Torah says Petr Chamor twice. And why does it say twice? Achiyeh Avlad Chamor V'anolad Chamor. I'm sorry. Achiyeh Hayulad Chamor V'anolad Chamor. So what we need is, I get to use this joke. I know I use this joke so often in Temura, but I'm going to use it here. We have a carbon copy. So in other words, the mother and the offspring have to be duplicates of one another. And so, if they are not duplicates of one another, if what comes out of the mother is so mutated that it doesn't resemble the mother whatsoever, so it does not have Kedushas Bechor. Uma heim ba'achila. So, and now, the Mishnah itself asked the question. Okay, so we know now it doesn't have Kedushas Bechor. You're allowed to eat it? It's kosher? So behematar shialda come in behematamea muta bachila, vitamesh yalda come in behematar asr bachila. And so the Mishnah gives us the rule. And that is, as in terms of isurei, in terms of machalos asuros, it's very simple. If the mother's kosher, whatever it comes out of it is going to be kasher la achila. Shayotzim in a tame, tame veyotzim in a taratar. Anything which comes out of something which is kosher is kosher, and anything that comes out of something which is not kosher is not kosher. Tanan Hasam, a little bit more for this morning. Rechel shialda min eiz ve'eiz shialda min rechel patar min bechora. V'im yesh bo miksa simanim chayev. So, we learned earlier that if what comes out is something that resembles, is close in resemblance to its mother, so then it's going to be chayev, meaning it's going to have kedushas bechor. So, basically what we're doing is we're contrasting what we learned right now in our Mishnah to what we learned previously. In our Mishnah, we learned that if the mutation is so great that what came out is something that does not resemble its mother at all, does not have Kedushas Bechor. If it's something that slightly resembles its mother, so then it does have Kedushas Bechor. Now, Minah Hanimili, Am Rav Yehuda Amakra, Ach Bechor Shor, Shehu Shor, Bechor Shor, Bechor Kesef, Shehu Kesef, Bechor Kesef, Bechor Eish, Shehu Eiz, Bechor Eiz. So as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, so it's based on the Psukim, Bechor Shor. So in other words, it has to replicate its mother, and Bechor Kesef, and Bechor Eis. So, Yachol Afil Yishbo Miksa Samanim, what if it's somewhat similar? So Tamalamar Ach Chalak. So the Ach is there to make a limitation. So the limitation is that if it resembles its mother just a little bit, so then it's going to have Kedushas Bechor. Now, the note that our Mishnah and the Brice that we just learned arrived at the same conclusion, but they're not learning it from the same source. Where we'll pick it up tomorrow is, tomorrow we'll pick up the various discrepancies in terms of whether you're learning it from the source of our Mishnah or whether you're learning it from the source of the Brice that we just learned, and there's going to be subtle discrepancies between them. Quick recap. Today we went over the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding whether or not the firstborns that were born in the desert, do they have Kedushas Bechor? Machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says no. Rav Yochanan says yes. Reish Lakish says no. And a tweaking of the position of Reish Lakish. A lot of dialogue that takes place between the Roman general and Rav Yochanan and Zakkai. A couple occasions in the Torah where it seems like Moshe is skimming off the top and no such thing. As far as the Levim are concerned, so the yes is true, there were 22,300 Levim, but no, not all of them were readily available to be Poda a Bechor. 300 of them had to be Poda themselves. Moshe's collection of the Machatzis HaShekel. Sounds like 201 Kikarim and 11 Mana came into Moshe through the collection, and meanwhile, only 100 was spent on the only 100 was spent on the on the sockets for the on the Adonim. So what happened to the other 100? So the basic answer is that the mana used in the for the Mishkan is double the amount of a regular mana. And the Gemara went on to discuss that in more detail. Other names of things. Why are things called what they are? Well, first of all, the fundamental question, why is Bechor have Kedusha? Why is the firstborn of the, why is the firstborn of the Chamor have Kedusha? So answer number one, because the Torah says so. Answer number two, because they helped and assisted us in leaving Mitzrayim. And then names of other things, why are they called that? So either because that's the name of it, or there's latent meaning in the name. And then finally, we started the Mishnah at the end of our daf in terms of mutations. How do we view mutations vis-a-vis Bechor, Kedushas Bechor, and how do we view mutations vis-a-vis Hilchas Machal Sasurs and Kashrus?